Welcome back to We Were Brawl, guys. Very exciting week we've had. Thank you to all the new listeners popping
in. Yes, thank you, guys. This is really a welcome surprise.
Excited to have you. Excited to be in your cars and homes and wherever you might be listening to this. Sometimes I listen to podcasts in the shower.
Interesting.
I have a little...
Oh, you have like a stand?
Hannah got me a little waterproof little boop that I put on the wall.
Oh.
And sometimes I listen to podcasts in the shower.
So, I'm a car listener.
Yeah, I mean, me too, mainly. But sometimes mainly. In the morning, I just like want to get my pod on. And mm-hmm. just put a little... It looks like a large pimple.
I'm more of a...
Cool. Everybody buy one.
That was not a glowing review of that product.
So what did it... Well, Emily's back, finally. Thank you.
I'm back.
It's so nice to have you here.
Oh, I missed you guys.
We missed you too.
Yes.
I'm sorry. It was a great interview, though. You all did wonderfully.
Thank you.
I'm really proud of you.
Thank you. Well, we did... What did we do? We did one of these, our preambles.
Yeah, just... yeah.
And then we did one interview. We did two preambles and one interview, sans you.
Yes.
And nothing burned down.
Nothing burned down.
Surprisingly.
Yeah. Yeah. Alex Sims was a great interview.
It was a great interview.
Check it out if you haven't heard it. Check all our other interviews. Oh, God.
It's the end / beginning of the week, so, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, depending on how you want to look at it.
Feel pretty good.
But, you know, I guess we should start.
Do you guys want to get into it?
Yeah, we should
Let's
talk
get
about
into it.
Okay. So
let's start with the happy news that the NRA has still said nothing, right?
Oh, you want to do
Is
NRA?
That
where
we're starting?
We should talk about that.
It's just being a little too quiet for my liking.
But they've been quiet about this entire Philando Castle situation since it happened.
Last year.
They have not said anything since July of last year.
And now it is almost July again.
Yep.
Well, and there was an article that came out with the Washington Post, and Philip Smith, who leads the National African American Gun Association, said that he hasn't seen any NRA statements since July. And he this is his quote, I've been reading pretty diligently. It troubles me tremendously when I see a young man following the rules, doing what he's supposed to be doing, and there's still no accountability from a legal perspective. So
another example of people dying for no reason.
For no reason.
And you know, this just last
absurd.
Week. Just last week, they released the dash cam footage, which a big flag that everyone's seeing is that the second officer that's standing outside the car, he doesn't draw his weapon at all.
At all.
At all.
Maybe because there was a child in the back seat. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was because... also, the officer, Yanez, I don't know his name, he was wearing a bracelet, I believe, that said Police Lives Matter.
Mm.
Was he?
The photo that you're talking about was taken after Philando
was
killed. But apparently they said it was taken that day. I don't.
Okay, but still, the fact that he's wearing that bracelet, it's like, I don't know. It's incredibly troubling.
I don't want anyone to get the impression that we're saying police lives don't matter, but just in the same way that we talk about Black Lives Matter, you know, we also aren't endorsing that police have free rein to just shoot and kill when all of a sudden they quote unquote. Felt unsafe.
Yeah, we're not necessarily anti-police here, but I am anti-police acting like gods, acting like judge, jury, and executioner with extrajudicial killings. I am against that. I think we're all firmly against that one.
Yes, firmly.
You know, it's not his place to do something like that. And then, yeah, a lot of problems with that. So we want to touch on that. I know
that
we touched on it last week.
Bringing that up to remind everybody to continue to remain involved in things like Black Lives Matter.
Speak out. Talk.
Mm-hmm. Speak out. Yeah.
And let's definitely, you know, there's...
Let's stop shooting each other.
Stop shooting each other as well. But, I also remember that there are good cops that know about these bad cops. And, like, their lives are also at risk. You know, you can read up some stories about how they are affected. Some of them lose jobs by being a whistleblower. You know, they see these things happening and, like, they're losing their jobs.
Yeah.
And, you know, no matter what, fight the good fight. You're within the system and you're trying to fix it, but police reform is definitely something that we need this country needs to work on.
Let's chat John Ossoff.
Oh,
I'm bummed. This is okay.
Yeah.
I have a lot of opinions on this one. John Ossoff
versus the other ones where he has no opinions.
Versus everything else where I have nothing to talk about. I talk too much. John Ossoff
just the right amount, though.
Lost the congressional race for the Georgia 6th to Karen Handel.
My home state.
And it's a bummer, and it's very sad. And, you know, I think that he would have been better than Karen Handel, mainly on the basis that I think like a wet napkin would be better than Karen Handel. that woman's terrible. But I think that there is so much worry, and there's so much hysteria because we haven't won a special election yet. And I think we just need to really
keep
calm down.
Going.
We need to keep going. We had this conversation, James and I, when we talked with Alex last week, and I've told this to a number of my friends this week. I'm like, listen, communities of color and LGBT communities have been kept going since for, what, 100 years, more,
at
longer.
At least.
So it's like, I'm sorry that we lost a couple of special elections. Dry up your tears and get moving. These were ruby red states.
You can have a day to be sad, and then you go, then you move on.
Aaron Blake of the Washington Post wrote a really amazing article called "Special Elections Are Still Painting a Good Picture for Democrats Overall." I suggest you read it. It's in it. There's a quote. He said that the good folks over at Daily Coast Elections have been tracking it all and comparing the results of each race to the presidential race in that district in November where available. And thus far, Democrats have done better than Hillary Clinton in 17 out of 23 races and better than President Obama in 2012 in 16 of 23 races. So there have been gains. There have been Democratic wins. They haven't been on the level of the Ossoff campaign, which was the most expensive congressional campaign in the history of the United States. But, you know, we came very close in South Carolina as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think we really need to chill out. I think that this these attacks on Nancy Pelosi are absurd. Just what the GOP wants.
Yeah, it's like they're planning it. But you know, it's like she's one individual in the Democratic Party, and yeah, she does. She's in a huge position of leadership, and things do ride on her shoulders in a lot of ways, but not all of it.
Well, and people are always saying like,
there's
so many
factors that goes into who wins. Like you can't even point a finger at the candidate a lot of the times. Like that's just absurd, and it's a complete overreaction.
But the thing too is like John Ossoff got tagged a lot. People were always like, oh, he's like a Nancy Pelosi, San Francisco, Californian. Mm-hmm. And you know what that really means? It means that she's a progressive. She's always had a lot of progressive values. She came out very early for gay rights.
Yes.
So, you know, if being a Nancy Pelosi Democrat is wrong, then I don't want to be right. I don't.
Put that on a shirt, y'all. We're going to sell it on Esty. Hashtag We Rebel.
We're firmly behind the Pelosi train.
Yeah.
It made me so mad. It was like, of course,
that's exactly what they want. And it's a kind of an immature, simple reaction to being angry about something. It's like, we're mad.
Tear it down.
Get her out. Mm-hmm. We're done. It's like, no. Get back up. Get back up and keep going.
But also get involved. Also,
yes.
Like,
get back up.
You can get in
there.
Listen
to We Rebel and get involved.
Run for
rate us five stars. Yes.
If you're so mad, run for office.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And do something.
I'm just tired of seeing a lot of people on Facebook.
I'm tired of Facebook.
I'm tired. And it's like, I get that you're tired, but welcome to politics, man.
Like, yeah, I'm like, you're tired? How about you go ask the 87-year-old black woman how tired she is? Like, get off your ass and stop writing, you know, Facebook status posts.
You know, I get being worried, but...
Yes. Yeah.
But we're going
to... channel that worry into action. Otherwise, you don't get to just claim... you don't really get to have an opinion unless you're doing anything about it.
But I've heard like up to 70 or 80 seats congressionally might be in play.
Great.
In 2018, of which we need
to
flip 24.
That's an opportunity, y'all. Let's do it.
I just think that when Republicans lose, they say, okay, and then they march to the next one. And then when Democrats lose, we're always just like...
emotional.
It's over.
Yeah.
And we're done.
Like, y'all got to stop.
Yeah. They're a machine. We got to fight that machine.
We become a more adaptive machine.
So one of my favorite things this week.
Favorite things?
Oh, one of my favorites.
Yes.
Is
it a quote?
It's not a quote.
A quote? I said quote.
James loves
quote.
A Kelly
quote. I do love quotes, and I don't have my quote of the week yet. Maybe it'll come to me.
We'll find one.
We learned something that we probably already knew, but Trump lied about the Comey tapes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness. Surprise.
Trump lied?
I'm so shocked.
He lied about the Comey tapes.
I can't believe he lied.
And that's the thing. You know, I said this last week. You know, if either he's going to say that Comey lied under oath, or clearly Trump was just lying himself. And what? Surprise. Oh, well, because how did he word it on his Twitter feed? Which I still think is bullshit.
I'll bring up his Twitter. Okay.
It's my biggest
fear whenever I go to his Twitter account that I'm accidentally going to like retweet or like something and then not see it. I'm very scared.
We'll tell.
I'll not see it.
I will
not see it.
Oh, here we go. This is how the conspiracy theory podcast starts.
I will tell you if you accidentally do that. You'll get you'll get a swift call.
A swift call. Yeah. But yeah, so so yes, he lied about the tapes. He's saying, I'm not aware of any such tapes exist. This is yet another distraction, another thing to get everyone riled up. And he doesn't deliver. He doesn't deliver. He makes false claims. And now here we are once again.
And you said something earlier. It just also sounds like nobody's talking to each other.
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh, I didn't say I had. Mm-hmm. What did I say? Who remembers? No one remembers.
You know, Sean Spicer.
Do you want the quote?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
This is the quote. Or the tweet, with all of the recently reported electronic surveillance intercepts, unmasking, and illegal leaking of information, I have no idea, second tweet, whether there are tapes, in quotation, or recordings of my conversation with James Comey, but that I did not make and do not have any such recordings.
Because this goes back to his theory that he thought Obama was wiretapping him.
Through a microwave.
So, yeah.
Well, but also today, we're recording on Sunday. Today, Kellyanne Conway said that President Trump is leaving open the possibility that his conversations with former FBI Director James Comey were taped.
This is why I don't think anyone's
leaving
talking to
open yes. the possibility.
I hate
you.
This
you don't. You
that,
can't say no. I don't.
Mean?
There aren't any. And then 2 days later, through someone else saying,
"There's an opportunity.
There's a chance."
It's ridiculous.
I guarantee you, Sean Spicer is now going to say something tomorrow.
Well, no, they won't because they're not public anymore. Those briefings
aren't
public.
They're not. But it just irks me.
Yeah,
I'm
someone on the inside.
It just irks you.
It irks me.
Yeah, I guess irk is the word I choose to describe my general feeling of this administration. Pretty irked.
I'm pretty irked on a daily basis.
Pretty flustered.
And how about that? Because I think I made it.
Flustered. Though.
Did I make this comment here? I'm not sure. But talking about how we used to have caricature drawings or in courtrooms and things like that, and now they're less frequent. I guess you don't see them as much because certain media is now allowed. I don't know.
Yeah.
But now we're back to
CNN
press briefings.
Did that.
Yeah. CNN had to send someone in.
What a cheeky little response to that. CNN, you little devil.
We're going backwards in so many ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Trump lied. Surprise to everyone, right? What else do we need?
Well,
to hit?
there was the big one, the Washington Post article that came out. I'm pulling it up right now. It dropped late this past week. Hold on, I'm bringing it up right now. It said Obama's secret struggle to punish Russia for Putin's election assault. If you get a chance, read this article. It's by Greg Miller, Ellen Nakashima, and Adam Entous, E-N-T-O-U-S. This is insane because it's an article that sort of details the Obama administration's struggle to like get the word out about what was happening with Russia. And I get it. Like, some people are like, oh, why didn't Obama do this? Why didn't he do that? And it's like, well, anything he would have done, he's the president at the time. It would have been politically charged. Yeah. It would have looked like he was trying to win it for Hillary. Mm-hmm. But you look at some of this stuff, and it'll take your breath away. You know, the amount, and not in the good way, of like Russian like meddling in this election and Putin giving direct orders. And I think that the Obama administration assumed, like most of us, that Hillary was going to win. But get a chance.
Now we know we can never do that again.
We can never make an assumption again.
No assumptions.
But read this article because it just like it brings to light a lot of the decision making that went behind whether to go public with this. Mitch McConnell wouldn't sign off on the Senate condemning Russia. A lot of the sanctions that they did, I don't think, went far enough. Obama wanted a bipartisan approach, which I really commend him for, but a lot of Republicans didn't want to do that. Republicans were very mum on this. So I just think it's really troubling overall that it's always one party. I know I've said this before, but it's always one party. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to get down into the conspiracy route here, but it really is one party, and it's one president by the name of Trump, who just keeps doing all these things. I sounded a lot like Rachel Maddow just then. Did you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
By the name of Trump. We'll be right back. She always does that.
Her cadence is very specific.
She has like a sort of, this was interesting. And then this happened. Why is that?
And then like a slight dramatic pause. No, I'm gonna, and you know, and she'll go back. Yeah.
She lays it out. We love Rachel.
There's a science. No, I love her.
But anyway, read this article because it's insane. And I think this Russia thing is really coming to a head. And you can tell that too because Robert Mueller. Now there's rumors coming out that Trump is mulling over once again firing Robert Mueller, which is hugely problematic. If he fires him, I mean, Adam Schiff, who represents one of the congressional districts in California, mm-hmm. has said that if that happens, then Congress will just appoint him again. Mm-hmm. So there's no real point in Trump doing that, but that won't stop him.
I think Trump literally treats every day as if it's an episode of a show.
Yes.
And
what a good analogy.
And I think he's expecting us to be hanging on every word.
I kind of am, though.
Yeah.
In a flustered, irked kind of way.
Right. Oh, see, irk. I love it. That's our word of the day.
It's the word
of the
day.
I don't have a quote yet, but I have a word of the
day. It's going to involve irk.
But yeah, he does this. He does this like flip-flopping, like, oh, maybe I'm going to do something. Oh, maybe I will fire him. I'm not sure.
I'm going to tweet
Let's
about
see
it.
If he's going to step down. You know, like, it's all this stuff.
Well, he said, this is the quote. He said, we'll have to see if Mueller should step down from the Russia probe.
Well, we'll have to see if you should step down.
He also said that he didn't want
to. I have some things I'll have to see about also.
He also said he doesn't want a poor person on his cabinet for economic jobs.
Right, because, you know.
His quote is, I love all people, rich or poor, but in those particular positions, I just don't want a poor person. Does that make sense? If you insist, I'll do it, but I like it better this way. And then Senator Ed Markey from Massachusetts responded, being rich doesn't mean that you have wisdom. It doesn't mean that you have compassion. It doesn't mean you understand the lives that most Americans are living.
Or the economy.
Or the economy. Yep. Yeah, because
that's
could
what,
be,
if it's an economic position, you need someone that understands the economy.
Are you going to hire a rich person who like took a lot of money from his dad and then when his dad died got even more,
got
money,
even more
and
money
and slapped his
and,
money on buildings? Yeah. Like, well, who's that just like?
Oh.
Oh, I think is it...
T-Dog?
Is it...
It's T-Dog.
T-Dog.
I'm not gonna, I don't want to call him T-Dog because I think that that makes him too just
friendly.
Ugh.
God. We'll call him.
What a just a. Yeah.
Anywho.
Okay.
Anywho. Moving on. What else happened this week?
A lot of stuff. Homeland Security officials said that Russian government actors tried to hack the election systems in 21 states.
21 out of 50.
But that's gone even more. Some people said that, maybe every state was targeted. There's another Washington Post article. This podcast is really just kind of a commercial for the Washington Post.
So,
but if you guys want to send our money our way, we'll subscribe to the New York Times. We'll tell you stories about them.
We're open to all of the above.
It says FBI Assistant Director of Counterintelligence Bill Priestap testified Wednesday that Russians also pushed false news reports and propaganda online using amplifiers to spread their message. He said that Russia has for years tried to influence U.S. elections, but the scale and aggressiveness of its efforts in 2016 made the efforts more significant.
And I think, and also they mentioned this in the article too, about how the internet has made it easier than ever, mm-hmm. which is true. I mean, it's and it's also, we need to, you know, think about how we're using the internet to protect ourselves. And I'm not a cyber security person. That's,
you don't
not
know the cyber like Barron?
I don't.
Barron knows the cyber. Barron Trump. He knows the
he
cyber.
He knows. He's all about cyber.
It's a direct quote.
He's got the best cyber.
A direct quote.
It's a direct quote. Trump said that during the debate. Wow. He said, my son Barron knows the cyber. What does that mean?
That doesn't mean anything. But yeah, I mean, it's true. And it's something we got to think about. And also my question to the world here is, what are we going to do about that? If Russia, you know, can use the internet, how are we going to use the internet to our advantage and protect ourselves?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I thought it was really interesting when Francois Macron was running for president of France. He had, it said either 9 gigabytes or 9 terabytes of false information. Like, they built a kind of like a hacker bait. Mm-hmm. And then the hackers took the bait. And then they tried to release all this information. And they were like, oh, yeah, we planted that. Brilliant.
Like,
I think that's how
you
do
I'm
that.
Like that. Yeah. I that is something that's good. That's good.
The rules have changed.
But
how it is now.
The way the internet works, like, how do you, because people take, you know, sure, they made all that up, but like, people could take that as gospel, though. And like, how do you come back from that and not? I mean, he still won the election.
I think you just like, you fill it with bullshit. I think that's what Macron did. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen, but apparently it just like was stuff it's very outlandish. It's like how, sorry, going back to this other Washington Post article about how the Obama administration response. One of their responses was to put in web nukes, basically. Mm-hmm. So, like, in the Russian, like, economy, like, all over, like, the internet in Russia, I have no idea how this stuff works, but apparently Obama had his administration place, like, web, like, bombs, the equivalent of an internet bomb, and if they're still there, and if Russia acts up too much, we can detonate these internet bombs and like freeze their economy if we want to. That's currently a power that America has, according to this article. So we're in a new state. Yeah, check the article out.
That's cool, man.
If anyone's involved in this kind of work, we'd love to interview you.
Yeah,
I'd love to.
And if you're anonymous, you know, we have
on.
Some voice scramblers. We can work
yeah,
with
we
that.
Can make
Were
it
you
happen.
Saying, like, if you're anonymous, like from the group Anonymous, or do you want to be anonymous?
But either.
Yes.
We'll take either. Cool. Open to both.
That'd be odd. I don't know how I would react. Yeah, so.
But it is. It's a whole new world, and it will continue.
And, like, sorry, we talked about this earlier. Like, should we keep talking about Russia? But it's just like, because Emily did bring up a good point that I think you said this, it distracts us from other points.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to talk about it, but I also think that it is becoming a distraction, which then they can have it be the shiny object to lure.
I disagreed with you before, but now
people
I'm
and voters and citizens to not think about like the Healthcare Act and other things that are going to affect their daily lives. Well, of
huge.
Course, you know, if the Russia thing turns out to be this huge, enormous scandal, you know, that will affect their daily lives as well. But
yes.
In the immediate term, you know, like, let's talk about the millions of people that are not going to be able to afford healthcare.
Let's talk about healthcare.
Let's talk about healthcare.
Let's talk about healthcare.
Let's talk about healthcare.
Speaking of, I just used my healthcare to book my annual physical.
Yay.
Everybody should do preventative care. It's very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I have a dentist appointment coming up.
Oh, good. James?
So, James?
Oh, I don't have health insurance right now.
Well,
stay healthy,
we'll
James.
Get you yes. some.
Well, you work at a gym.
I do work at a gym. That
so
is
don't,
true.
Touch
but no,
this is actually very sweaty.
That was not what I was saying.
No, I you know, well, part of
like,
the reason was because I was gone out of the country for the first part of the year.
Oh,
sure.
Right.
So I wasn't, you know, paying for health insurance that I wasn't going to use. But the other thing is, and maybe this is specific to me. I can't put this on anyone else. But an actor who's right now in between jobs, not making that much money. The most affordable option that I have for healthcare is still a little bit out of what I can pay.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So it's like it's one of those things where it's like it's a little bit of a gamble. And yeah, I know with our current with the ACA, there is a
like a roadster just drove by.
I basically came into the apartment. But yeah, you have the
studio
you have the fee.
Office.
You have the fine at the end of the year if you don't have insurance. I think for more than 3 months. Sometimes it's cheaper to pay that than it is to pay the. So we'll see. Hopefully, you know, if things work out.
I do love my health insurance though, and it was quite easy to acquire as
Stay
a freelancer.
Healthy.
So
my dad's a doctor.
We'll sidebar
worst case
offline
scenario,
that.
We'll yes. Skype my dad in.
Yep. So let's talk about the.
Let's talk about healthcare.
Bill. Yeah. Let's talk.
So a new poll shows voters in deep red states don't like ACA. This is from Vox.com. The quote is, according to a new survey from the University of Maryland's Program for Public Consultants, 63% of those surveyed in deep red districts like the House... The House proposed ACA legislation, and 60% of those all surveyed, Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, oppose the key provisions of the bill
67%.
Outright. 67%. What did I say?
60.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. That's why we're here.
I didn't do my vocal warm-ups.
That's why we got co-hosts.
You can take a sip of
kombucha.
Your kombucha.
I'm a coastal elite head to toe.
But it is quite telling that you know, the Republicans are so steadfast in pushing this through. You know, they want to vote way quicker than anyone wants them to. But the majority of America does not like
as
this.
Early as this week is the potential vote. But they need 51 votes, and there are 46 Democrats, 2 Independents that caucus with the Dems, so they're basically Democrats. Versus 52 Republicans, but 5 GOP senators, 5 so far, have come out. And they are Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, Mike Lee of Utah, Rand Paul of Kentucky, and Ted Cruz of Texas, and Dean Heller of Nevada.
They're all saying no.
They're all saying no for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And it's important to understand that because these guys should not be lionized as brave heroes. Ted Cruz and Rand Paul think it should be harsher. I can't speak for Mike Lee and Ron Johnson, but I can't imagine that they... wanted to be more liberal. It's a mess, and it will put millions of people out of insurance. It will be a jobs killer. It's ridiculous. And then Trump tweets out the other day that, you know, kind of a threat. He said, you know, I hope that these GOP senators who are against it can find a way. Like, I'd hate for them to continue something that doesn't help people. It's just really gross negligence and not how you should behave as the leader.
It's the same way he intimated, you know, I hope you can let this go. You know, like
yes.
You
yeah.
And, I lost it. I tried to remember a quote and then I didn't have it.
Well,
sorry. I could just make something up, but I won't.
So, And a lot of them haven't seen it. It's been a group of 13 Republican senators. Yeah,
that's,
and so,
that is also, I mean, mm-hmm. the contents of the bill is way more important than what I'm about to say. But that's crazy mm-hmm. that people haven't even seen it. And yeah. then they're expected to vote on it as early as next
now,
week.
Now, question.
Like, these things are long. Mm-hmm. You got to read it, understand it.
Well, it's 142 pages.
It's 142 pages.
But my question is, what was different from this situation than the Affordable Care Act? Because
What was different? Yeah. The Affordable Care Act took about 2 years mm-hmm. to put into law. There were over 200 Republican amendments added to the bill, mm-hmm. and it was passed with a 60 threshold vote in the Senate, and it was passed with a majority in the Congress.
So for anyone that's ever asked me the question that I just asked, there's your answer.
There's your answer.
So
boom.
Yeah.
Makes me want to just pluck my eyes out of my fucking skull. I'm like, Wah! And then I have health insurance, so I guess I'd be okay, mm-hmm. maybe. Oh, yeah. Mad.
Please don't do that, though.
We're going to do something cool, though, today on the pod. You want me to do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to do it.
Oh, I'll do it, I guess. Okay, so
we're going to do what we should all do at least
all
once
do
a week.
This week. You should do it. There's 5 calls a day. There's a website that does that. Can someone look that up?
I will.
While I'm doing this.
Or you're on your browser.
You should do that. Again, ResistBot is 50409. I'm going to say it every single podcast. You can text that number, and it will fax messages to a senator, be they Republican or Democrat. So we're going to call a Republican staffer right now on the pod. We're going to be calling Senator Susan Collins. Her staffer, her name is Elizabeth Allen. The phone number for their D.C. office is 202-224-2523. Senator Susan Collins is listed as one of the GOP senators that is on the fence about whether or not she should vote against it.
Has concerns.
So do you want to talk about this 5-vote thing real quick or something while I'm bringing this number up?
Yeah. So there's a website called 5calls.com, and it says turn your...
.org, by the
dot
way.
.org. I'm literally looking at it, and it says .org. So that's an interesting thing that just happened. It says make your voice heard, turning your passive participation into active resistance, which is what We Rebel is all about, mm-hmm. finding specific things you can do that slot easily into your life to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And they aggregate a lot of information for you about who's voting yes, no, unknown. So you have some guidance on who to call, and whether it's someone in your state or a state that you're from or have lived in, you can go ahead and access that information and their phone numbers and all the sorts. So 5, just the digit, calls.org.
All right. You guys ready?
Let's
do it.
Are you ready?
I hope so. 202-224-2523. I mean,
probably Suze.
Here we go. We're calling.
Thank you for calling Senator Susan Collins, Washington, D.C. office. Your call is very important, and we look forward to hearing your thoughts and comments.
Nothing.
Allegedly.
To leave a message for Senator Collins about current issues, please press 1.
Okay.
For information about Senator Collins' office address and hours, please press 2.
No.
Just press
1. For information
1.
Well, just in case there's anything else.
Senator Collins' press team, please press 3. For instructions on how to submit a scheduling request.
All right, it is 1. It's been 1.
It's 1.
Just in case.
Good idea, though.
Thanks.
Please
Thank
leave
you.
Your comment after the tone. If you would like a response, please leave your name, mailing address, including city, state, and
I'm not going to do that on the podcast.
Oh.
In addition, you may also email the sender through her website.
You should do it, though, if you're listening.
Senate.gov under the contact tab. Thank you for calling the office of Senator Susan Collins. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hi, my name is Nick. I'm a concerned United States citizen that heard that Senator Collins is on the fence about the American Health Care Act, and I wanted to voice my opposition to the bill. I support the ACA, Obamacare. I support that bill, and I think it's a bill that helps keep millions of Americans insured. I think that the repeal of that bill would cause millions to lose their insurance. It would cause millions to lose their job. And I've heard that you are on the fence about that, and I would urge you to please vote against the American Healthcare Act. Thank you so much for your time. Is that okay?
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
How long was that call?
With our message debacle.
About 2 minutes, right?
About 2 minutes.
Yeah, just about 2 minutes.
That's like not very much time. So we can easily each do at least a call a week.
Yeah, you can step outside when you're
whatever.
At lunch.
Yeah.
Just very simple.
I get nervous calling.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone does.
Everybody does. So you should know that when you call, it's nerve wracking. But you can leave a message, or the staffers are they're young people, and they're very nice, and they're supposed to take down your messages. You know, and I understand you can be mad, you can do whatever you want. You're an American. do, you know, you can talk, use your power of speech and, like, you know, voice your concerns for these things. This bill might go to a vote this week and it is tremendously bad. My father is a doctor. He is against this bill. Okay, I know people in the medical profession that are against this bill. I know people that are not in the medical profession that are against this bill. It is so bad and it will affect the United States for years. So.
Cool. Well, do you, I think we should get into our interview.
Yeah. Helen Hong, activist, comedian.
So excited.
Very excited.
Very excited.
Stick around.
Guys,
listen to us.
She was on Setup Squad.
Oh, God.
And I'm one of the five people who have ever watched
James.
This show.
Please, where's the music? James. I hope it's fading us out right now.
Fade.
So, for all of you listening.
Welcome back to We Rebel, guys. Today we have Helen Hong on the podcast. She is a comedian. She's an activist. You might have seen her on The Thundermans, Inside Llewyn Davis, Blunt Talk. She worked with the Bernie Sanders campaign, specifically with Asian American Outreach, and she also worked for the People for Bernie Sanders. So we're super, super excited to have you.
Hello. Yeah.
Welcome.
Yay. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
This
I'm excited.
Is also, we do a lot of over the phone interviews. So this is kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
We can see each other in the house. Our listeners still can't see us.
I know. Nobody can see my very, like, my wild facial expressions that I'm making.
Yes.
I wonder what people think we look like.
Well, I think they probably can just go to our Facebook page.
True.
If they haven't liked it yet, they should.
That wasn't
tell
a plan.
You,
that wasn't even a plan.
I can tell you from having done radio, because I'm on infrequently, I'm on Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR.
Oh, nice.
People never want to really know what you look like. They think they do, and they're always disappointed.
Well, because you naturally paint a picture of someone in your head.
Well, there was.
Then,
did you see there was a BuzzFeed article once that I thought was so funny? That was it was what you think all the hosts of NPR look like, as opposed to what they sound like. And it was everybody like, it was a different picture, except Ira Glasses was the exact same. It was like, he looks exactly what you think he sounds like.
Oh, wow.
I thought it was so funny.
Ira Glasses is just a specific name.
I was like, that is sort of what I think Ira Glass looks like. That makes sense.
Yeah, nobody, I show pictures of Peter Sagal to people who are fans, and they're like, you can just see the horrible disappointment in their faces. They're like, oh. That's not what he's like in my mind.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, well.
Well, I'm just going to tell everybody that if they saw your face, they would not be disappointed.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. Yeah, hey. That's a We Rebel stamp of approval.
Stamp of approval.
Everything said on the pod.
I've been stamped.
Yes, it is stamped.
You take it as
Let's
gospel.
Get into it, though. Yes. So you're currently a working comedian, but before that, you worked with Bernie Sanders, as Nick just said.
Yes.
So
well, concurrently.
Concurrently.
By
mistake. Great.
What's that term? Walk and chew gum at the same time.
Yeah. I was doing stand-up comedy and supporting Bernie Sanders at the same time.
Yeah.
And it really changed my life. I had never gotten that politically active before, even though I had always sort of wanted to, and I was always interested in politics and enraged by things in politics. But that was the first time I really, really jumped full steam ahead onto the moving train that is Bernie Sanders.
What was the catalyst to get involved, especially with Bernie's campaign?
Well, I mean, everyone knows that political season was just so heated and just so nasty, and everybody was getting into it. And, you know, I actually am a lifelong Democrat, so I was sort of on the Hillary train early. I was like, Hillary's my gal. But then I started hearing more and more about Bernie Sanders and, like, listening to him. And luckily, I sort of am friendly and work with people who are, like, kind of high up in the Bernie chain. And so I got invited to, you know, small group things with him. And I was super inspired. And I was like, this guy's legit.
Yeah.
Like, this guy's everything that I've wanted a candidate to be. He's saying all the things that I've wished they would say. And he's clearly not in it for the fame and the glamour of it. I mean, look at the guy. He barely combs his hair. You know, so the more that I listened to him and the more that I followed him, I was like, no, this is the guy. This is the guy. And so I was like, and he's not going to get there. He's got a long road ahead and he's going to need all of us to jump in. So I was like, I'm going to jump in. Yeah.
Tell us about, like, what is... he like it like in those smaller settings? Like, what's your favorite like Bernie interaction?
That is the most amazing.
Let me start with the basic question.
My hand is in my face is in my hand.
I know, you look dreamy. Loving like, Well, here's my favorite thing about him.
Yay.
Is that he's actually not that charismatic in person.
Ah. Hilarious.
Yeah, which is, and the reason why I love that about him is that you kind of can tell it's really not about ego with him. Sure. Like, you know, we've all heard stories about Bill Clinton in person, yeah, and apparently he's just magic. Like, he's a magical unicorn, and you get in a room with him and everyone melts away, and you feel like if you're talking to him, you're the only person in the room, mm-hmm, and his eyes twinkle and you just get drawn into this. And the same about Obama.
Yeah.
They're just very charismatic people. Bernie's just an old dude. Like, he's exactly what you see on the screen. He's just a cranky old Jewish man.
Yeah. Nice.
And he's like, and he's hunched over, and he doesn't really like to make eye contact, and he just does the thing. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about him, is that it's not about ego. It's not about the cult of personality. It's really about the message.
Nice.
100%.
Yeah.
He really believes in the movement. He believes in the message. He believes in what he's saying. It's not ego for him. It's not like this weird, like, needing to be in front of people. Like, he doesn't have any of that. And so when you're in a room with him, you're like, oh, that's Bernie Sanders. You're not like, oh, I just met Superman. You don't get that. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. I think that was his big appeal too, that he was speaking, I think, more so in the way that Trump ever did, but he was speaking to the common man. He was speaking to the things that everyone, we all agreed on. We're like, yes, we do need more of a minimum wage so that we can live off of this.
Well, he also, I think the thing too, there was a town hall he did with Ted Cruz post-election where they talked about healthcare, mm-hmm, and a woman raised her hand to talk, and she was like, I'm an employer and I have more than 50 employees and I can't afford insurance for everybody. What should I do? And he was like, you shouldn't have 50 employees. And I was like, oh, no one would say that.
Yeah.
No one would say that. I just think that's incredible.
Yeah.
I
mean, he's right though. That's,
he's right.
So
no,
real.
Just, but we need,
if you can't take care of your people, don't hire them.
Yeah. Because every other politician will be like, first of all, thank you for your question. Both my parents are human beings. I've grown up with human beings, and I love human beings. And then they like give some bullshit answer.
Yeah, the bullshit. It's all about the bullshit.
But
and
he's always
just not.
Right there.
Yeah, and he doesn't shy away from, like, he's like, yeah, I'm a democratic socialist.
Yeah.
Bring it, bitch.
Yeah.
Because I believe it, because capitalism has failed us. Mm-hmm. Guess what? So let's do this. Let's
He's also, like, been right. Like, there's always, like, a video that you can find of something. Like, when something happened 10 years in the past, he's always like, this is going to happen. And then it happened.
Yeah.
Like, why weren't we ever
And
listening?
He's always on the right side of, the history of it.
Yep.
It's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also I think he got in it for the right reasons. He was just a bleeding heart liberal way back in the day, and he said, what I'm seeing happening is wrong, and I'm not going to sit back and let it happen. Like, I'm going to jump in and tackle this stuff even though I don't have any experience.
Yeah.
You know, when he ran for mayor of Burlington, he had no experience.
Yeah.
And he was like, I just think it's wrong, and I want to do something about it.
So now when you got in, oh, sorry, were you?
I was just going to ask a question, but you can ask one.
Okay.
You go.
Okay, thank you.
I'm so polite here.
We're so polite.
Wow. when we're playing Secret Hitler, which is a great game.
We were talking about that earlier. Secret Hitler is a game that destroys friendships.
It does.
Or makes them stronger.
Or makes them stronger. Yeah.
Everybody go order it right now. It's not available to the fall yet.
He betrayed me.
It's destroyed the friendships around this table.
Oh, yes, by far.
We don't trust each other after that game. You said, so you got into the Bernie Sanders campaign, and like, what was that like? You know, because the Clinton campaign was already kind of an established machine at that point.
It
so
really
there's
was
like,
a machine.
And so the Sanders campaign kind of, I feel like it was like almost, you know, and I, you know, was part and donated and, you know, read up, but it felt like some of it was building the plane in the air. So I'm curious what that was like getting that grassroots, because you're starting off so far.
Yeah.
In
so
back
far
of,
ahead.
Of,
I mean,
where
so far
Clinton
behind. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's like, that's, I just said, you know, that was part of the reason why I jumped on board. I was like, he needs all of us. Mm-hmm. Like, this is, we are so far behind, and we are up against the, you know,
machine.
Not only the evil empire, but like multiple evil empires, like the machine. And so if this guy's going to get anywhere, he needs all of us to jump in. And I think that was the beauty of it. And people just did what they could.
Yeah.
That was the beauty of it is you asked me, like, what was my title? We didn't have titles. Like, nobody had title. It wasn't that like set up. Like, you just did what you could. You jumped in where you could. And some people phone banked, and some people knocked on doors, and some people were like, I have a room that I can let someone crash in because your campaign office doesn't have enough money to rent hotel rooms for your staff in the cities you need to go to, or I can drive people to where they need to get to, or I can just show up with a case of waters for people. I mean, everybody just jumped in where they could. And I thought that was the beauty of it. It was truly a grassroots effort.
Yeah.
And people did it because they believed in it. And people really believed with heart and soul and just gave up a lot of blood, sweat, and tears because, you know, we believed.
It was very Wellstone-esque. You know, Paul Wellstone, the senator from Minnesota?
Yeah.
That was like, one of my old bosses used to work for Paul Wellstone. He was saying sometimes it was hard for him to watch Bernie. Because it reminded him so much of Paul, who passed away sadly in a plane crash. So it was like very, those grassroots.
Yeah.
Now we get to.
So
I didn't forget.
So friendly. I was curious, what was your day to day like when you were working on the campaign? You mentioned that you were kind of specifically working with Asian populations,
So I wasn't a staff member. I wasn't specifically hired. I was completely on a volunteer basis. So I just did what if the Asian American outreach group was like, hey, would you mind going here and doing this? I'd be like, okay, I'll go do that. And then a lot of it was also self-motivated. Like, I have a past before I did stand-up comedy as a TV producer. I produced reality television for women, mostly. Mm-hmm. I produced a show called What Not to Wear for years.
Yeah.
I know that show.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
I produced a lot of wedding-related shows for some reason, which is probably why I'm never getting married.
You've seen the horrors.
I've seen the bullshit. And so I have that skill. It's a skill that I have. I know how to produce television. And I was like, I'm going to produce a video. The first video I produced for Bernie was, it's called Get Offline for Bernie. Because I did all the things. I did phone banking. I knocked on doors. I traveled across state lines to canvass for Bernie. Nice. And I was like, this is great. But also, like, I have bigger skills than this, and I can probably reach a bigger population if I do something like produce a video for him or do a comedy show, or, you know, I can do something bigger than just knocking on doors. Right. Mm-hmm. But because I had done all those things, I had had all these funny experiences and weird experiences that if you're like, well, I've never knocked on strangers' doors before to talk about politics. And I'm like, I have. And here are the weird things you can expect.
Yeah.
So I put those things into a comedy video, which I produced.
Nice.
And, so that's something that I did. And I think the video came out great. And
it's a great video.
Really, really fast. And it's funny and it's cute. And it's things that you can do. Like, it explains phone banking and it explains canvassing and it explains registering people to vote. That's just something that I had an idea and I had the skill and I was like, I'm just doing it. And I sunk, my own money into it. I found a director and an editor who did also believed. And so he gave me the super cheap rate.
Mm-hmm.
We produced the whole video for $500. And
really?
Yeah.
Look at
nice.
That.
Everyone volunteered. All the actors volunteered and I got houses. You know, people were like, you can use my apartment and you can use this equipment and I'll come by and bring a case of water. And yeah, so I mean that was the beauty of it. It was such a collective.
It's a great video. Like I watched it. That was very fun.
Get offline for Bernie.
Yeah, but that's great because you took something from your life and you just applied it, and I love that because there's going to be future elections and it's important. I think people get intimidated sometimes to get in the fold.
Yeah,
of that sort of stuff.
And I encourage that story as to inspire anyone out there who's like. Because the whole point is like, I want to be in the resistance, but I don't know how,
exactly.
Right? Or I want to be in a resistance, but I have no political activist background. You don't have to. If you're a baker, you can use your baking skill as part of the resistance. If you're a singer, you can use that. If you are a crocheter, somehow that can be used to be part of the resistance. So whatever the skill is that you have, you can use that to be part of the resistance, believe me.
Mm-hmm. And how do you feel now, so post-election, how does comedy play into our current political landscape? Do you find solace in being able to, use your comedy as a voice? Like, what do you think?
Absolutely. And I think I am so disappointed in our press. Mm-hmm. in our mainstream media press, and I feel like comedy is doing what some of the press should be doing right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw a meme the other day that said, the only fake news is whenever a mainstream media interviewer doesn't say, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
When they're talking to him. Because it's like the mainstream media has normalized all of this crazy shit that's not normal that Trump and his administration are pulling.
Yeah.
Whereas the comedy has stepped in, you know, with the John Olivers and the Stephen Colberts and stand-up comedians at my level just doing, you know, shows every night being like, what the fuck is happening? This is not normal and we should be not accepting any of this.
Yeah.
Whereas like if Sean Spicer or Trump or whoever, Jeff Sessions, like why is that fucking guy still in office?
Yeah.
You know, why? And the mainstream media, every time they look at something that's outrageous and treat it as like, okay, this is how we would normally report something that a normal president would do. You know, we're doing the country a disservice.
Yeah.
And comedy has really stepped into that space to be like, no, this is fucking bullshit.
Yep.
This is batshit crazy, and I don't know why we are not all screaming in the streets.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like comedy and punk rock do so well under Republican presidents.
Yes.
It's just like we're back, baby.
We're back.
Do you think emo is going to make a rise then?
Think what?
Emo probably. Music. Do you think it's going to come back?
Hopefully,
yeah. I mean, you look. The thing too is like Obama was so funny that it was hard. Like Obama's White House press. Those dinners,
yeah.
He was just like a stand up. Like he's actually got great delivery.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah. Now we got Trump. So it's like, you know.
Well, he won't even go to the course. He won't even go.
The most humorless human ever.
Yeah, yeah. So and you're. I saw that you were working with Greg Proops recently.
Yeah.
You were. Yeah.
So I work with this great group called Lady Parts Justice.
Mm-hmm. I don't even need to hear anymore, and I already love it.
Lady Parts Justice.
Answer over. Just kidding. Keep talking.
Like a renegade feminist comedy, not just comedy, arts collective, because we have comedians and writers.
Do you have dancers?
Videographers, and I think we do have dancers.
Okay,
yeah.
If you don't, I'm coming.
Yeah.
Or if you want another dancer.
Yeah, we're a collective, so everyone is invited. Men,
you're just
women.
Leaving the pod now.
Bye, guys.
You're like, I gotta go find Lady Parts Justice. See ya.
With my Lady Parts. All right, carry on.
But it was started by Liz Winstead, who co-created The Daily Show.
Oh, great.
And she is such a badass, just renegade bitch. And I mean that in the best sense of the word. Mm-hmm. And she is, she started this group, and the whole mission of the group is to normalize abortion and to fight for abortion rights and be like, we're not pussyfooting around abortion. Abortion is, it's here to stay, and we're not going to call it soft names or be embarrassed about talking about it or be ashamed that we had one or any of that stuff. It's like, no, one in three American women have had an abortion.
Yeah.
So guess the fuck what? Everyone you know has had one. Mm-hmm, you know, like, you know someone. You definitely know someone. You definitely know, not everyone, but you definitely know people that have had it. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe you yourself have had one and you don't want to talk about it. You're embarrassed. So we're trying to fight all of that. So she's such a renegade and such a badass. And she started this great group called Lady Parts Justice. And we travel around the country and we do stand-up comedy tours and we do videos and fight against these laws. And what I love about Liz is she makes a mission of going to places, the real red states, where they're passing
That's
these
awesome.
Insane. Because you don't need, you know, Lady Parts Justice is like, it's great in California, but we don't really need it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But how we need it in Alabama.
How do your audiences in those red states respond?
That's the most amazing thing.
Comes to your events?
That's the most amazing thing. Is that at one point I was so enraged by a law that had just been passed in Texas. Texas, you know, is a notoriously horrible state for passing laws against women. Mm-hmm. And I said, I was...
And children and...
Yeah, humanity.
Minorities.
And I said something at one point in front of Liz, and I was like, well, fuck Texas. And Liz said, now, Helen, there are a lot of really good people who live in Texas, and they need our help. And I was like, fine.
You were like, that's fine, a sour shot of tequila.
Fine, don't fuck Texas. Fuck the horrible government of Texas.
Because there's Austin, Texas.
Austin is the blue dot in the massive
and there's
red state.
My sister in Dallas. Just one.
A little bit. We'll help. Yeah, we got to help Emily's sister.
Yes.
And her husband's great, and they've got a great dog. She's a Democrat, too.
Yeah, and Texas is a huge state. Not only Austin, but listen, we just came back. They're currently on a tour. I did a leg of this tour that they're on currently. I was in Jackson, Mississippi, Birmingham, Alabama.
There we go.
Okay.
And Atlanta, Georgia, which
we
is
love, that's where
yeah.
But but like, talk about the blue dot. There is always a blue dot, no matter where you are. As you could get to the reddest county of the reddest state, and there is still blue dots there.
Which is interesting because there's also still red dots here, like
in Fresno. LA here. I mean, I know Trump supporters who live in Los Angeles.
It's crazy. But it's important too, like to get. It's like, you know, there's the blue dots. I feel, especially in these southern states, it's like people think during election seasons they're like, oh well, we're going to be overpowered, so like might as well not vote. You know, so it's like good that you're doing this sort of stuff because you get to see more. You're like, oh, we're all blue dot people. That's exciting. Like, and maybe some red dots can become purple and some purple become blue. And
fun.
Yeah, it's so great. I mean, it was such an education for me because I was just one of those people that would just discount an entire state and go fuck Alabama. But
well, that you can do. I'm from Georgia, but the rest of the South, you do have to get a second chance.
Like working with Lady First Justice and actually going to these places, you can see Like we were in Birmingham, Alabama. We did a show there, and guess what? For the first time ever, we had anti-choice activists show up at the show.
Wow.
With interesting.
These crazy men. It's always men. These crazy men who show up with these horrible posters that have like these fake fetus pictures on them and go, you know, turn to the, you know, you're killing babies or whatever. And they showed up at the show for the first time. And
did they then attend the show?
Some of them apparently did buy tickets and come in, but were driven out just by sheer... because they were such a small minority, they were like, well, we're clearly not. And these crazy loud bitches are not gonna like,
we clearly
think they're gonna out yell us, and we're like, we're, you know, badass feminists from come on.
And also their money that went to help Planned Parenthood,
exactly,
right? So
exactly,
y'all done fucked up.
Yeah. And so, but the most beautiful thing about seeing those protesters show up at our show in Birmingham, Alabama was not like, I didn't even have to, if I didn't want to, I didn't have to say anything because guess what? The blue dot people, the local people of Birmingham, Alabama who were coming to see our show got into it with them.
Yeah,
and we were like, this is awesome because the average person doesn't see what, a woman trying to get an abortion in some of these places goes through to have to walk this gauntlet of usually fat, ugly white men.
Yeah.
And also, I feel like disgusting men holding these signs being like, you're going to hell.
It's the worst. Yeah.
And also when it's not like an intense election time, those conversations or those interactions don't happen. And people are like, it's cool. It's fine. It's all going to be fine. So it's good because the process of changing the color of these different people from red to purple or getting everyone closer to the center, which is where we all mostly live, you know, it wouldn't happen if you didn't have a show and they wouldn't have had that interaction. They wouldn't
definitely.
Like,
I mean, I'm sure it was. Yeah, I'm sure it was eye opening for some of the locals because unless you're at an abortion clinic, you don't see the level of craziness that you have to deal with.
And you don't hear the stories and meet the women and know why they got there. No one wants to get an abortion. No one wakes up and they're like, to do today, get an abortion,
you know what, that'd be a fun way to
spend
an afternoon.
So like the process of getting there, if you don't understand, if you don't know anyone that's gone through it and talk to them about it, like you really are completely uninformed.
And the other thing that I really appreciate about Lady Parts Justice is you know, Planned Parenthood gets a lot of play. They get a lot of, they've been getting so many donations and stuff, and not every abortion clinic in the country is a Planned Parenthood. In fact, a lot of the ones that are actually doing the frontline work of abortions, like we were I can't remember if it was Jackson or if it was Birmingham, but we were at the only abortion clinic in that entire state.
Oh my God.
And it's not a Planned Parenthood. It's an independent clinic. And so I encourage, and Liz and Lady Parts Justice, we encourage you if abortion is a thing that you feel strongly about, to go past just, I'm just donating to Planned Parenthood. There are so many independent clinics across the country that do not receive Planned Parenthood funding. Mm. And if you're interested, you can look up the National Abortion Federation or the Abortion Care Network or NARAL. Those are some good groups. Like National Abortion Federation and Abortion Care Network particularly, mm-hmm, will give you a list of independent clinics that are doing the frontline work of actually providing abortions in this country, because mm-hmm, a lot of them are not affiliated with Planned Parenthood, and so you can donate to a Planned Parenthood and they don't get that money. Mm. And like, for instance, Texas, going back to Texas, had a law struck down last year by the Supreme Court where Texas was trying to close down half the abortion clinics in Texas by saying, well, you have to have, the doctor has to have admitting privileges at such and such hospital, and your hallways have to be so and so wide for two gurneys to pass.
I remember seeing
all these crazy
like
laws. You know, they're trying to chip away. They know they can't just overturn Roe v. Wade, so they're trying to find ways to chip away at your ability to get access. And if you can't get access, who cares about Roe v. Wade, right? Like, mm-hmm, it's just theory. So the clinic that brought that lawsuit was not a Planned Parenthood clinic. It was a whole women's health independent clinic that got the woman who owns it, like, mortgaged her house to take that lawsuit to the Supreme Court. And God bless her. Mm-hmm. You know, so please look up the two organizations.
The National Abortion Federation and the Abortion Care Network.
Correct.
Cool, yeah. Well, definitely also put stuff out.
Yeah, great.
For
thank you.
Put that on the page.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And I think too, it's like, it's a, now was this group, I'm sorry if I missed this, was the group formed as a response to Trump, or was this a pre-Trump thing?
Pre-Trump.
Really?
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Pre-Trump. I've been working with them for years. I think Liz founded the group, I want to say 5 or 6 years ago, and I've been working with them for about 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. But yeah, pre-Trump, because even before Trump, this bullshit was happening, right? The Texas laws were being passed like before Trump was in office.
Yeah.
And they're trying to be passed in Alabama and Mississippi and Colorado, and it's just so upsetting.
Yeah.
I mean, abortion is such a, it's just, ugh. I feel like, unfortunately, we've been losing the rhetoric, because we say things like, nobody wants to get an abortion, or abortion, nobody's a fan of abortion. Yeah, we let them call themselves pro-lifers.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they're assassinating doctors. They're planting bombs and shooting at doctors. You are not a fucking pro-lifer. You are anti-choice.
Yeah. Do you think too, like, you're a comedian, actress, and in entertainment. I remember I watched an episode of the newest season, the newest iteration of Degrassi, which mm-hmm. is incredible. And there's an episode where a girl, a woman, excuse me, has to get an abortion.
Degrassi, is this the high school
show that Drake was on?
Yeah,
but yes. Now they have but they have the new gen.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan.
of the new gen.
Yeah, the new gen.
Post-Drake.
And post-Drake, PD. And somebody had to get an abortion on the show. And I remember thinking, I was like, well, how are they going to handle it? What are they going to do? And then she made the choice to get an abortion, and she went to the clinic, and the doctor, she was like, do you have like a lot of people my age come in? And he was like, you're like the third person this week. It's okay. And it was like amazing. I just remember being like really hit by that, because it was
like Canada. It plays out very well. It's very detailed.
Did you watch this?
I've watched
really?
It.
Really? I didn't know
Nick
that.
And I both have watched this season of Degrassi. I want everyone to know that.
I have not watched it, but I will.
But no, I will say, because I ended up reading an article shortly after watching that episode, and written by a woman, and she was saying like, thank you for producing a show with an episode that details what it's like for a girl of that age to go through having an abortion. And it wasn't there's nothing crude about it. Mm-hmm. It was just laid out very detailed. And yeah, you felt it. Like she was a little bit unnerved, but like her doctor was very calm and just talked her through. It's beautiful
about. Oh, sorry.
I love what you're saying too about like normalizing the rhetoric around it. Cause I also think that when we lift abortion frequently out of the whole birth control pie.
Yeah.
You know, and so like, even though like I literally just said no one wants to get an abortion, you know, it's like it lives in a pocket where it's like, if we're not having that conversation around, you know, like get access to birth control pills and understanding yeah. safe sex and all these other things, and having and just talking about sex and what it happens when you have sex and those kinds
and
of things.
And guess what?
On all
men
the
are
pieces,
involved.
Yeah, yeah. On all yeah. the yeah. pieces of the like, pie, surprise. You're not talking about it accurately.
It's so true. And we've let this, the liberal side has let the rhetoric swing to like, it's baby killing, or it's this torturous thing, and it's, oh God, it's the worst thing that could ever happen to a woman. And that is not the case for a lot of women. 1 in 3 women that you know has had an abortion or will have an abortion, most of those women have children already and are having an abortion because they can't afford more children or don't want to, you know.
Especially
like not be able to give
Act,
their children.
They definitely won't be able to give them.
Yeah, and for some, you know, for a lot of women who get it, it's not like a, oh, this is the worst, this is the most torturous decision of my life, and I'm going to have to deal with my situation with God, and am I going to hell? Some of those women are like, no, I need to fucking get one.
Yeah.
Period. Yeah. I got pregnant. That sucks. I gotta go get one. I'm not having a torturous moral scenario about it. Mm-hmm. I need one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And guess what? It's been legal in this country since 1973. So get the fuck out of my way.
Yeah, and it's not even like this like big bad procedure. You know what I mean? It's like it's made to be this
it's
like
an
whole
outpatient.
Yeah.
Procedure that can, you know, be safely done in 2 hours.
Yeah.
And, but that's, you know, and some yeah. people, and we've made it this elephant, we've made it this huge thing. And for some women, yeah, it is a horrible, torturous thing. And maybe it is the worst thing that they're going to do. And maybe it's like, maybe they do have to have a serious talk with God about it or whatever. But not all women are like that. And we shouldn't treat it in such a, it's like sometimes it's just a thing that needs to get done.
Yeah, I think too, and well, that goes back to my other thing about my Degrassi point question was like, do you think as an actor, as a creator, as a comedian, do you think that, you know, what is it for branding for us, what can we do as entertainers to start changing this? You know, is it getting to studio heads? Is it getting to producers?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the Degrassi thing is a great example. There was a scene in Scandal, right, where someone had to get an abortion. It was
I
sort of like
Scandal. Big yeah. fan of Olivia Pope.
Just like crept into the mic when you said that.
No, you like,
I feel really passionate about Scandal.
Your voice went down 2 octaves. You were like, I love
I have a huge girl crush on Kerry Washington.
Yeah. I mean, I do think we, Hollywood, right? Mm-hmm. We in entertainment made LGBT rights come as far and as fast as it has come in the time that it took because we were doing it, mm-hmm. right? Because you're watching Modern Family, you're watching these great normalized, fully formed gay characters, and you're like, oh, well, that
it's
guy's not
so
a creeper.
Real.
Or that guy's not a child molester or creepy yeah. weirdo mm-hmm. or like, you know, ridiculous queen or whatever our impression of, you know, because so we live real. In California, but if you don't live in some of these liberal elite pockets, you literally have never met a gay person.
Yeah.
And so your impression of a gay person comes from TV or movies.
Yeah.
Right. And so I do think, you know, gay rights have come so far because of what we've done in Hollywood, and we have to do the same for abortion, and we have to do the same for, God damn it, women getting paid yeah. the same as yeah. men. Are we still talking about this
yeah.
shit?
Yeah.
You know, or whatever it is, health, you know, healthcare, getting healthcare, universal healthcare.
Black people should not just get killed.
Yeah.
God.
Just don't kill. Stop killing people, guys.
A lot of
please and thanks.
Just don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is something we can all agree on.
Just something
people shouldn't
on.
Die.
It's so enraging to me, and I can't. It's actually been something that's been like hindering me watching the news lately. Is just this spate of, you know, just innocent Black folks getting gunned down the streets.
Yeah,
it's so fucking enraging, mm-hmm. and we need the non-Black folks to jump on board. yeah. with yeah. the Black Lives Matter mm-hmm. movement.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot because James and I go to Black Lives Matter LA meetings.
I'm down. Yeah. Like, please invite me.
Oh, my God. Please come with us. It's so much.
I want to go.
Yeah, it's great.
It's wonderful.
Asian people, we need to stand by our Black brothers and sisters. Because guess what? Like, then I just saw a video the other day in Minnesota. A cop beat the shit out of an Asian guy.
Yeah. Yep.
You know? And there's this been weird divide between Blacks and Asians in this country. And it's like, we got to stand with you so that you'll stand with us because we're stronger together. And when you put all of the marginalized people together, we outnumber them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We outnumber them if we stand together.
Especially if white people actually stand with you.
Yeah.
Then it's a really small group of people we need to talk to.
It's like, you know, there's blue dots all around you. So I think that's the big find your blue dot.
I mean, you cannot watch that. Yeah, it's so true. Find your blue dot.
That's the title.
That is like going to be the title of the pod.
Yes. Nailed it.
We always naturally find it.
We always naturally find it right there.
We did it.
Well, thank you again for coming.
Gosh.
I know this really flew by.
Thank I know.
I know. We didn't even talk so about the stuff that I kind of really wanted to
what
talk
do you,
about.
Do you want to talk?
Say it. Do
we
it.
Can do a rapid
we
fire.
Can talk about
which
it.
Is, which is, you know, I'm a really big, I'm still a big fan of Bernie. I know Bernie has come under fire for some scandalous stuff recently, and I'm still on board with him because, you know, he is saying we need to take a page from the right wing, which is that, you know, you can stand on these issues. You can stand on certain issues and go, well, I don't like Bernie because of this, or I don't like the progressivism because of this, or Hillary would have won. It's like, just hold your nose and let's win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's hold your nose and win, because that's what the right has done. And guess what? You know, there's an entire swath of right-wingers who hate Trump, but they held their nose and they voted for him because we're not winning.
Yeah.
You can either be right or you can win, and I'd rather win.
Yes. Yeah.
I love that.
That is...
No.
No, I think it was abundantly clear.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. I think, well, I mean, like, we got to have you back on. We'll do a live show.
Yes.
I'm sure the Podfather, Ryan, will set it up. You have to be a guest on it.
I would love to.
Cool. Well, do you have anything else you want to, like,
yeah, any shows coming
plug,
up or anything?
Or,
do I have any shows coming up? I'm sure I do. I'm blanking out on them right now. but please, you can catch me on Wait, Don't Tell Me sometimes. And you can catch me on Nickelodeon's The Thundermans sometimes. And my website is helenhong.com, which sometimes my calendar on there is updated. But you can also follow me on the socials at funnyhelenhong.
That's great.
Nice.
Awesome.
Also, just a reminder, guys, check out the National Abortion Federation, Abortion Care Network. Check out Bernie and get involved, because Helen just got involved. Mm-hmm. And that's amazing. And that's what we're doing. And anybody listening at home, just get involved.
Yes.
So,
Should we plug our Twitter?
Oh, yeah, check us out. Go to whatsacreative.com. Check out We Rebel. We're We Rebel on iTunes. We're We Rebel Podcast on Twitter. We Rebel Podcast on Instagram.
We're on Facebook.
We're on Facebook.
Just hit all of them.
Send
us
a friend request.
Like, subscribe, rate.
Nick Carterossi, give me a friend request.
Yeah, JW Toll. I'm out there. Come find me.
Thanks, guys.
Thank
you. Outside. All right, bye, guys.
Bye.
What's a Creative Podcast Network?